Books with Aaron and Polly. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
What? Oh, you know, it's just, you know, you and me again. We got sick notices from both Andrew and Wayne this week. I think
they're just falling apart. We're the healthy ones.
No, no. I think it's mono. I think they've got the kissing disease. I think Wayne and Andrew. That's what I think.
They've been smooching?
I think so.
Off the mic smooching. That's in our that's in our Funny Books After Dark Patreon edition.
But it's also against podcast bylines, I just want to say.
Yeah, I don't think that's in policy, frankly.
Yeah, we're going to have to write them up when they get back.
Fraternizing between coworkers is not allowed.
Not at all allowed. So, just saying.
Yes.
But well, disappointed in their behavior. Disappointed.
Are you, or, you know, you can't be disappointed if you just have low expectations of people, really.
That's true. This is true. And really, no lower expectations are held than those of Andrew and Wayne.
So, agreed. I mean, we've known them for quite a long time. We know to expect very little.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, Paul, I feel bad for you.
For me?
For you. I feel bad for you because your life has currently not been enriched by the wonders of Alien Earth and Peacemaker.
It is killing me to not be watching Alien Earth. Peacemaker, I'm a little less sad about
because you never finished season one. Yeah, you never did season one, so you don't. Yeah. You have no concept of what you're missing.
No,
but yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I have not finished episode 5 yet, but episodes 1 through 4 are just fantastic. I mean, I truly love this show.
I hear episode 5 of Alien Earth. Or are you talking Peacemaker now?
Alien Earth.
I hear episode 5 is a big gross out episode.
You know, I am 40 minutes in and the gross out hasn't happened yet. It's a long episode. It is 104 minutes. Is that right? I think that's right.
104 minutes. Damn.
Yeah. It's either maybe it's 84 minutes or 60. It's longer than normal because normally the episodes are 45 minutes long and I still had quite a bit to go when I turned the TV off last night because suddenly very tired and that had nothing to do with the episode. It had everything to do with a very long week at work. That cramming 5 days worth of work into 4 days is murder, by the way.
It's the worst. And it's really poor. It's ill-timed because Aaron has now joined the 4K rebellion.
Holy crap, I tell you.
Revolution. I don't know that's a rebellion. It's a revolution.
The wife gave me a TV for the patio. It is a great big 4K machine, and I have been watching all kinds of shows on the patio. You know, beyond Peacemaker, beyond Alien Earth, I have now watched Prometheus and Covenant because I had them both in 4K. Well, you know, they're great in 4K. I mean,
they're beautiful. They're beautifully filmed movies. Yeah, they're just not
very good.
Yeah,
they're not well written. Is the problem? Everything else is really great about those movies, but the writing is terrible.
Yeah.
But watched the 4K restoration of Cleopatra this week. I watched 2010. Loved that movie. I gotta tell you, you know, this is a hill I'll die on, Paul. 2010, hot take, better movie than 2001. Just saying.
Okay. All
right. Just saying. And the reason why I say that is that, you know, 2001 is a visionary film. It is an art film, but it is not an entertaining film. You know, there's not a movie star in that movie, right?
Yeah.
You know, Cure Dulay, love the guy, not a movie star. Roy Scheider, 2010, movie star. He holds the camera. And I got to tell you, that movie holds. Yeah. Roy, what did I say?
No, I said I miss him.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, Roy Scheider is just fantastic, and he holds the camera. I love that movie from beginning to end. And, you know, shot in the 80s, it holds up. Those special effects are just as good as special effects you see today. In fact, I would say they're better in a lot of ways because there's not a stitch of CGI in it, and everything looks real. Everything looks like you can touch it. And I love that movie. And the movie, you know, in the effects and directing, they do what they know they can achieve versus reaching and not attaining as so much of our CGI does these days. I blasted that mother off the patio over the weekend. It was great.
Well, you know, you mentioned a couple of things, both, you know, picture quality and Roy Scheider played into my week this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because on Labor Day, I went to the local IMAX where they have a 50th anniversary Jaws re-release.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's still playing, but whoa, it is so... I mean, the restoration on it is gorgeous. I mean, it looks like a movie that was filmed last week.
Yeah.
I mean, because even the other than some hairstyles in the movie, it's a relatively timeless movie. You know, they aren't using cell phones, but they aren't really using phones at all. It's an island. Right. Like, I mean, it's a classic for a reason, right? The 4K restoration, the IMAX, I mean, it is just brilliant. You know, we were watching it and Jen leans over to me after the opening sequence. And if you're not familiar with Jaws, which what the hell, it's 50 years old and it's a classic. You should be.
Right.
You know, the opening sequence where the girl takes off her clothes, runs into the water and gets eaten by the shark.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jen leans over to me at some point. She's like, was that more boobish than you remember? And I'm like, yeah, you know, like it is so, I mean,
clarity. Yeah.
It is the clarity. She is so very clearly naked.
Yeah.
In a way that you've not seen on any home, you know, home video. It was like, whoa, okay, yeah. I mean, she's butterball naked and there's nothing left to the imagination. And you know,
in a PG movie, right?
In a PG movie.
Yeah.
You know, and the gore hits harder, everything hits harder because everything is just so clear and crisp and it's a great restoration. So if it's still playing in your area, you know, they're doing a lot of re-releases lately, I've noticed.
It's because there's not enough good movies out.
There is that, right?
Yeah.
Like I saw over the last month, there was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think had a 30th anniversary release. IMAX this week was showing not just Jaws, but also Prince's Sign of the Times concert movie.
Oh, nice.
Right? Prince and IMAX, that's got to be good.
Yeah.
But the Jaws was definitely worth the price of admission. I'm really glad we did that. We watch that movie every year for July 4th anyway.
Right.
But even seeing it in IMAX, I wouldn't say it's a whole new movie, but it is definitely a vision of Jaws that you've not seen before.
It's crazy that's 50 years ago.
Yeah.
That is crazy. One of the things that I envy people who live in California for, and there's not a lot that I envy about California, being a native Texan, where our motto is get your California out of my Texas.
Yeah.
I really envy the number of repertory theaters they have.
Where they're
showing, archival or, you know, repertory style films. You know, you're doing Hitchcock festivals and what have you. I really, really am jealous about the number of those. I hear, you know, I listen to a number of podcasts that come out of California, and they're always talking about these different, you know, movie fests they've been to, you know, this week down at the, you know, whichever theater. And I was like, God, that just sounds amazing, you know, being able to see some of those things. And, you know, the best thing that I've got, the best choice that I've got is, you know, buy it on 4K and, you know, watch it on my screen at home, which is great. But some of those things you'd really like to see in a theater. Like, you know, when I saw North by Northwest, you know, the Hitchcock film with Cary Grant, when I saw that on the screen the first time, that was transformative. I mean, it's just... There is something so majestic about some of these movies on the big screen that, you know, as much as I enjoy watching movies at home, there are some films that, you know, just, you know, you need to be able to see it that way at least once.
Oh, yeah. And there are some films, you've just never seen that way just by nature of how they were released or when you were born. And, you know, you mentioned these classic cinemas, and I'm surprised that you're, you know, the Dallas area doesn't have more. I mean, Texas does seem to embrace its past.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I know this isn't, but cinema past, I guess it's, you know, it's different. But Detroit actually has a number of theaters that do such things, you know, but they, you know, some of them are just like, they're going to show Rocky Horror Picture Show with a live, you know, whatever interpretation, that kind of stuff. But one of the historic Howell Theater, which I have not had a chance to attend, but there is a theater called the Historic Howell Theater in Howell, Michigan, that starting on Friday, September 5th, which was yesterday, as of this recording, they are starting to show Hong Kong cinema classics.
Oh, man.
And they are generally films from directors John Woo, Su Hark, Ringo Lam, Chin Su Ting. And so it includes films like City on Fire, Hard Boiled, The Killer, A Chinese Ghost Story, A Better Tomorrow, just some of the, you know, 80s and early 90s, mostly late 80s, you know, especially those early John Woo seminal movies. In fact, I'm looking at it now. Hard Boiled plays this coming Tuesday. The Killer plays next Wednesday and Saturday. I mean, those are just films that very impressionable to late 80s Paul.
Right.
And so, you know, late 80s, early 90s Paul. So I might have to sneak out and try to catch some Hong Kong cinema classics.
You know, I would love to be able to see, you know, some of Kurosawa's work on the big screen. I have never seen a big screen presentation. Like, I didn't see Ron when it was out at theaters. You know, like an idiot, I, you know, didn't go and should have, because I mean, I'm sure that would have been fantastic. But would love to see, you know, some of his samurai movies, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Aaron, I'm scrolling down on this page.
Yeah.
On Saturday, September 20th, 2025, they are having a little Batman Day. So Saturday, September 20th is Batman Day. You celebrate. You know,
if you celebrate,
and they're having a double feature of Batman: Mask of the Phantasm, followed by The Dark Knight.
Oh, fuck you!
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, you got to go to that.
I have to go to that. I actually saw Batman: Mask of the Phantasm on the big screen when it came out, but I mean, that was 22 years ago, 1993. Yeah. Wow. Great movie. Yeah, I gotta go to
and
that.
They just did a 4K on that, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. So it's gotta be, you know, nice and restored on the big screen.
Oof. Yeah, that's a great movie. I mean, no matter how you saw it, that's a great movie.
And a good segue into our conversations today, because we are DC centric today.
Yeah, we're going deep into the DC.
We are. We're gonna lots of Joshua Williamson, Ron Mars. You know, lots of Superman, lots of Batman. Uh-huh. You know, they DC.
One has might say too much Batman.
Oh,
I mean, I'm not making any judgment. I'm just saying there's a lot of Batman.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll talk about it. Why don't we start with, you know, we did not record last week because I was out at Universal Studios Florida checking out the Halloween Horror Nights. But this week, but the two books came out last week, and you know, they are two books that I talked about last month, and one of the things I had mentioned about them last month that I really enjoyed is that Justice League Unlimited and Superman, though they have different writers, Justice League Unlimited is written by Ron Mars, Superman's written by Joshua Williamson, they have the same artist in Dan Mora, and they come out the same week for some reason. I don't know how Dan Mora does it. So these books very much feel tied together to me. Again, you know, almost like you're watching, you know, two CSI shows or NCIS shows. Like it feels like a connected universe in a way that I really am enjoying. But Aaron, you have not been reading Justice League Unlimited in a while, but I guess based on our previous conversation, you decided to go ahead and pick it up. So I'm very curious what you thought of issue 10.
Yeah, and I picked it up as well because of how it's tying into the current Superman story. So, you know, with the whole Legion thing. So, you know, I picked it up just so that I could have some greater context. And, you know, I think I'm not saying anything too controversial when I say that Dan Mora's pencils on this book are just outstanding.
Yeah.
I just absolutely love looking at his artwork. He is he's just, you know, doing the Lord's work here. I struggle with this iteration of Doomsday.
The Time Trapper or Timekeeper Doomsday. Yeah.
I'm a purist. I don't want a smart Doomsday. I want Doomsday to be just an engine of destruction, and that's all Doomsday is. I don't like, you know, I think his power should continue to evolve, but not necessarily his intellect, his higher brain functions. I think he should be an animal. Right. I think that's what makes him so terrifying in The Death of Superman is that, you know, he can't be reasoned with. And when you take that away by making him somebody who can reason, who can think and talk, it just makes him so much less frightening. right?
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's, I feel like there are any number of other villains that they could have swapped into this Time Trapper role. And I hate that. And I've hated that, you know, ever since, you know, they started doing that kind of crap with Doomsday. I'm like, leave Doomsday alone. Just have his strength and powers evolve. Don't change his personality. Don't change his intellect. But, you know, you read the comic that's in front of you, Paul.
Exactly. I mean, eventually we'll get a smart Doomsday comic book, and it'll be like when Hulk was working at the
he'll be Dr. Doomsday, you know.
Exactly. Dr. Doomsday.
Pediatrician.
But, I mean, to your point, Dan Mora's, I mean, especially on both books. And the thing is, Dan Mora, now, I don't know, but like, in these books, it could be the coloring, but definitely a lot of, you know, there's some type of digital work being done here.
Oh, it's definitely being finished digitally.
Yeah, it's definitely being finished digitally, but both books, neither one is boring visually. And what I mean by that is there is shit happening on every page from corner to corner. There's multiple characters. It's not like one person in a black room with no background. I mean, these are jam-packed. I mean, especially even more so than Joshua Williamson's Superman. You know, Mark Waid is still writing his, like, clusterfuck version of Justice League Unlimited, which is like, I'm throwing everything at you you can possibly think of from the history of the DC universe on every page.
Right.
Multiple storylines happening simultaneously, that kind of thing. And even though that turned me off at first, I grew to care for it in the We Are Yesterday storyline, which is the one that came right before this one. And they're very clearly building up to the DC KO storyline in both books. That's the big crossover that happens next month. But I'm really digging both of these books. And I thought Justice League Unlimited number 10, you know, it's definitely, you can see it's building to something. Because now Darkseid's fire pits are starting to grow on Earth. You've got an appearance by the Darkseid's Legion of superheroes from the future. They're the ones who take out Doomsday Timekeeper. And you've got these parademons that are now incubating the Justice League Watchtower. Like, there's a lot going on in this book. So
you're absolutely right.
I'm curious if you liked it, because I know you didn't pick up the We Are Yesterday storyline.
I liked it enough. There is, you know, to your point about how there's so much going on and there's, you know, stories overlapping stories. It reminds me of a Legion of Superheroes book, to be perfectly honest, where there are so many characters and there's so much going on. You're like, now, wait a minute. What are we doing now? and, you know, more so than an issue of Legion of Superheroes, I at least know everybody in this book, right?
Yeah.
You know, I've got so much familiarity with this cast, this huge cast of characters. But there's a lot of like, okay, let me reset. What are we doing? What is this? I liked it enough. I'm interested. You can't beat the Dan Mora art. And I'll pick it up just for that in the next issue and just see how that goes. I just really hate the time trapper stuff, but it looks like maybe he's off the board for a while in this book. So, you know, maybe that will be an improvement. So,
yeah, no, I enjoyed this issue. I thought this was, you know, I'm like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the Justice League has been betrayed by Airwave. So the one quote unquote quiet moment in this book is Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman arguing over this iteration of Justice League. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like that they, you know, Clark has basically invited the entire DC universe to be a Justice League member. And Batman basically wants to use Red Tornado's AI to do background checks and make sure that none of them are going to betray them like Airwave did. And so, you know, that causes a rift between the three main characters. Not that it's nothing we haven't seen before. Obviously, we remember Infinite Crisis and how that started with Countdown and Batman, you know, having files on the Justice League and all that stuff and, you know, and the Lost Trust there. But I thought it was good. And you know, same with Superman number 29. Superman number 29, a bit less of a busy book in that it's at least one single storyline with Superman and Superboy Prime heading to the future. If you read DC All In issue 1, where Booster Gold, you know, basically got captured by the Legion of Darkseid, Like, this is a direct sequel to that. Like, this is definitely the next piece of the connective thread that is this whole DC all-in absolute, you know, saga. And, you know, Superboy Prime does Superboy Prime things. They, you know, they do a little little background of, like, here's who he is. And he punches holes in reality. You know, they bring that back. But, you know, the key highlight of this book is still Dan Mora's art.
Let's stop for just a moment and take just a moment to take a look at that cover. That comic book cover, that's a comic book cover, Paul.
Yes, it is.
It has Superman kneeling in front of the tombstone of the Legion of Superheroes. Little monument to the Legion. It's just a very evocative, emotive sort of cover that is doing all the work in the world for this story. Really tells you everything you need to know about what's going to happen in this book.
Yeah,
I think it's the first cover this year that I've really gone, huh? We may have a cover.
Yeah, it's a strong cover. It is a very strong cover.
But I got to tell you, I love this issue. Let me just say that before I jump into my critique. But I hate what they're doing with Superboy Prime. His talking to the camera, the Deadpoolness of Superboy Prime is driving me crazy. He's talking directly to the reader a number of times, and he's talking in comic book, you know, like, oh, you know, he's talking about comic book storytelling tropes and how this is going to work out. And I appreciate that they're trying out sort of a dichotomy in the storytelling between how desperately serious and dark so much of this story is, and then how light and funny Superboy Prime is being. And you know, Superboy Prime is a monstrous character. We have seen him be horrible. And I just think that placing the comedy on him is wildly inappropriate. I really, really, really hate that. When Booster shows up, I'm like, I can, you know, Booster is a great comic relief in these stories, even though terrible things have happened to Booster since we've seen him last.
Yeah, he's had it rough, and you know, they don't say how long he's been gone, but you know,
it looks like it's been a while. Yeah,
yeah, at least 2 years in his in his time.
But you know, we get who is it? Starman, right? Who shows up, and it almost feels, I mean, I don't know about you, Paul, but that felt very much like out of Jeff Johns' run.
Yeah,
on Justice Society, you know, his Starman, and I was just like, man, I really like how. I mean, I know it's not a direct link to that, but it sure did feel like, you know, taking a page out of that book by Jeff Johns, which I never felt like was appropriately resolved. You know, all of that whole Legion story in Justice Society, and I think this book is fantastic, with the exception of those Superboy Prime notes. I was very frustrated by his interjections throughout the book.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I did like about Superboy Prime is that he, you know, because he's basically from the real world, right? And he knows the comic books, and he's like, don't worry, I know how this is going to end. We're going to go to the future. This is going to happen, blah, 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 blah. And they get to the future, and he realizes he was wrong.
Right.
And I did think that twist was actually really good, because now it's like, okay, maybe he doesn't know what's going on. Maybe he doesn't know what's going to happen. I thought that was a good twist on the book. But yeah, I loved this book. I really am digging the storyline. I like that we're now getting the next phase of that Booster Gold and what's happening there. Yeah. So, I mean, this is good comics, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I will say, you know, even though obviously a lot of this is stuff we've seen before, this is, I wouldn't say it's unpredictable, but I definitely don't know where we're going.
Yeah, me neither.
In these storylines. And that's exciting to me as a fan. It is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Exciting to me as a fan, Adventures of Superman, Book of L, number one.
Yeah, you know, we followed that Philip Kennedy Johnson Superman arc through, I think it was Action Comics or Superman or both, I don't remember. For a few years, he was the writer, and he kind of went through this whole War World saga, Superman of War World. You know, he had the shirt off and the chains and the, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, we thought
and created a whole new mythos around Superman. You know, and that's absolutely what I love about it is, you know, he added so much to Superman through that War World run.
Yeah, and he liberated that planet, right? He liberated those people of War World and adopted two children as his own. And, you know, we've seen them in books, but obviously very loosely.
Not much lately. And I'd been concerned that maybe, you know, all of a sudden they had been written out. So it's nice to see them back.
Yeah. And maybe they've been told, hey, don't touch, because Philip Kennedy Johnson is essentially, you know, he's got this 12-issue arc to finish his run, which, I didn't realize he wasn't finished.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like, okay, this was a good ending, but it seems like he had one more year planned out, but obviously, you know, things happened, you know, reboots happen, and there was a company-wide reboot with the All-In stuff. But this is him coming back to finish his story. And so this is, if you have not read those books, I will say there's very little leniency. If you're not familiar with that storyline, I mean, there's a little bit of stuff.
Yeah, they're not going to help you out a whole lot with this. But the good news is that I believe that's collected in trade.
Yes, it's a Superman World Saga.
Yeah, and you can certainly read it in the DC app. It's all there. But I got to tell you, I thought this book was a whole lot of fun. I love how it's leaning in to the story of these two kids that, you know, have joined the Kent family. I really dig, you know, the scenes on the farm.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. I thought this book was a whole lot of fun, and I was just so appreciative. You know, when I didn't know anything about this book other than Book of El. Right. And I just okay, I'm in. You know, I'm a sucker for Superman. As long as the art's strong, I'll give a first issue a shot, you know. And boy, this book really satisfied. I read this, I think, Wednesday night when it, you know, the day it came out, and sent you guys a note going, you know, highly recommend. I think this book is fantastic.
Yeah, agreed. I really enjoyed it. You know, I wouldn't say it's a negative, but the only thing that I would say is, when you read books like this and Superman and Justice League Unlimited all in the same time frame, and they're all about like different alternate futures, you know, obviously DC does have control over the timing of their releases, and they're, you know, when they're releasing books that basically just tell, you know, hey, Superman's in the future and it's a dark future, it gets a little like, okay, like you couldn't release these like a few months apart so that it doesn't just kind of, you know, tell similar stories. And they are very different, but it's still kind of like, Superman is flung into a far future where things have gone awry and there's no Superman and he needs to, you know, to inspire hope again, essentially. But I will say one of the most interesting parts of this book was the back matter. I don't know if you read it. It's very wordy.
Yeah.
I would recommend reading it because it very much explains who the characters are that we're following in the future and what has happened. And basically, because at one point in the book, basically, it's not really clear, but Superman is flung into the far future, and so he's basically not there to affect the present and the past. And so this is, in the back matter, it explains what's happened in Superman's absence and how the characters we're following are actually descendants of El, you know, into the far-flung future. So it's definitely worth reading the back matter because it explains kind of what has happened to Earth since Superman was taken off the board. That leads us into the, you know, the epilogue of this story, which is set in the future. So,
well, I thought it was terrific. I did not, however, think that Absolute Superman number 10 was as good.
I'm really struggling with this book.
I am too.
And you know, I'm struggling with it because it's shocking to me that this book is still being done by the same creative team that did the first arc. The first arc of this book was well drawn, well written, and, you know, a great alternate interpretation of Superman that I really enjoyed. This second arc, it's the same artist, but the art is muddy and confusing and not really interesting. You know, it bugs me because basically Absolute Superman number 10 is, you know, they're in Superman's head and trying to break him by making him revisit, you know, certain moments in time to like inspire him to kill, to just break his spirit, which is literally the same shit I read in Absolute Superman issue 11, like a week or two ago. and, you know, to my point about timing of releases, why do two absolute books have to have the exact same story within 2 weeks of each other?
Yeah.
You know, it's sucky to me that happens. I mean, I get it. There's not a lot of new ideas out there, but when literally two books out of the four or five that they're publishing in the Absolute Universe have the same story within a few weeks of each other, you know, someone at the overall editor level needs to say, you know, this is a little similar.
Agreed.
Maybe we should move this to arc three instead of arc two from a timing perspective.
My problem in this book, you know, this book takes place with Superman having been captured by, you know, Vandal Savage, and Vandal Savage giving Superman to Brainiac to break, because he's wanting to break his mind, to brainwash him to be a bad guy like Vandal Savage and to be his son. And so Brainiac is, you know, all up in Superman's head and is creating all of these visions, these nightmares where he is pushed to kill. And Brainiac just seems like, and I know this is funny when I say it in terms of a comic book, he's just a cartoon. You know, he is.
Yeah. Well, I think they're setting up, right? I think they're setting up that Brainiac is this snivelly little weaselly character in this book.
Yeah.
You know, under the control of Al Ghul. But I think they're setting up that he's going to take over.
Well, he's such a campy villain in so many ways. You know, he's, you know, very much mustache twirling and crazy. He seems more like the Joker than Brainiac. And I'm fine with Jason Aaron deviating from the character blueprints that we've known and kind of turning them on their head. But I just hate how, you know, how comically villain he is. And again, you know, I understand we're talking about comic books, but he seems so ridiculous he stops being scary. And I feel like the intent is for him to instill fear here. You know, that we're supposed to read this and go, oh my goodness, you know, Brainiac's really a bad, bad guy. But he's just so comically, you know, described. And I really hate that. And I was really bummed out. Superman in his, you know, mental visions, his dreams, you know, he's connected to, you know, Brainiac, and Superman, I guess, figures out a way to connect to the subservient Brainiac clones and starts, you know, preaching peace and liberty and, and, you know, is affecting those clones. And so you see that the clones are beginning to resist. And then the next panel is just, you know, Brainiac has chainsawed them all, you know, for their rebellion. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was really hoping.
I guess we're not going to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really disappointed in that. And, you know, and you'll see in parts of other panels where he is, you know, flaying the flesh from them and, you know, just doing all kinds of terrible things. The thing that really bugged me about this book is Superman demonstrates a degree of character, of nobility, of, you know, just being so deeply morally grounded that we've not seen in other books.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing, you know, Superman inspiring hope, but we've not seen that. That's this Superman.
Right.
So it felt a little out of place. Like, I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'm like, where did that come from? You know, because we've not seen that it's been instilled in him by his parents, by the Kents, by any of his experiences. And so where does that come from? And, you know, there's been no hint of it other than, you know, he's certainly, you know, been defending people. But his whole beacon of hope thing, I'm not convinced. You know, it just felt like that was just out of the box, you know, just out of the box. Here you go. You didn't know we had this. Here it is. You know?
Yep.
And I was disappointed in that because Jason Aaron's a better storyteller than this.
Agreed. And so, you know, this was the finale of this arc. I'm going to give it one more arc because the first arc of this book was great. And honestly, the first book with Brainiac in it, like the first issue of this arc was great. It's just that the rest of it has really not been well told. So I'm hopeful that things will turn around in the next, you know, the next story arc. So I'm gonna give it one more story arc to see if the book turns around.
So, you know, going back to what you had said before about, you know, can't DC Comics, you know, make sure that their stories are distinct, and particularly in release week, you know, that, you know, they're not telling one type of story, in both or more books. It was jarring. And I know this has been going on in Batman for, you know, several months now, but it was jarring in Batman number one to have Commissioner Vandal Savage when we've got, you know, Vandal Savage being Ra's al Ghul.
In the
Absolute Superman books. I read Absolute Superman immediately after reading Batman number one, and I was like, okay, that's a little distracting. But
yeah,
I got to tell you, Matt Fraction, Jorge Jimenez, writing and drawing Batman number one. Great book. Yeah. I really liked this book. I like this book a lot.
Yeah, I think they knocked it out of the park with issue one. I have one issue, one qualm, I should say.
There is only one issue, so.
Correct, you know, correct. I have one concern with issue one, and it's that we now have a virtual AI Alfred. I do not have a problem with that, because I am very much missing Alfred's presence in the Batman books.
Yeah.
My issue with it is that they didn't even really talk about it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just
all of a sudden he's there. Yeah. I figure it's in another book.
No, because I read the previous iteration of Batman. Mm. And they did not bring this up. Now, I did not read the Jim Lee Hush books, because I think that was actually the last arc before the reboot. But before that, they did not. So, like, and I'm sure they'll address it. You know, Matt Fraction is an excellent writer. Friend of the podcast, Matt Fraction, actually.
throw friend up in air quotes, would you?
Judge, true. Very true. But, you know, he did a great job with Batman number one. And, you know, I think, you know, Jorge Jimenez has been on the book before. You know, so he's obviously a strong art style. I think his style works great. I think if DC can adopt some type of house style like this between its books, I think this style also flows well with Dan Mora's.
Agreed.
While not being the exact same, I can see how this book fits into the same universe.
There's also a transition that I really loved when Batman turned on his bat gauntlets, and there's this darker sort of Batman that appears. Right. You know, and Batman's wearing the blues. Right. So he's very much more bright and shiny superhero Batman versus, you know, Dark Knight Defender of Justice, you know. But when the bat gauntlets come on, it's almost a Mike Mignola sort of take on Batman in those panels. And it's intentional, because it repeats in several panels. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is badass. I love that take. And then when he turns the gauntlets off, that goes away.
It transitions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like he turns the bat gauntlets on and he's much more menacing. Right. Mm-hmm. And I fucking love that, Paul. I thought that was amazing. There are a couple of other things I really liked about this book. One, I enjoyed that it was one and done. Right. Certainly it's setting up a new storyline for Batman. But, you know, the main action in this is that Killer Croc is loose and Killer Croc is changing. Right.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this a few weeks ago. Right. When it comes to like, we were talking about Fantastic Four and how, like, the next storyline literally started in the issue you're reading.
Right.
And that's how this is done. Like, it wraps up one story, and the last few pages are basically an epilogue that sets up the next issue without feeling like it's a two-part, you know, like it's a multi-parter, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I loved it. And I loved the take on Croc. And I loved, you know, Batman doesn't have his Batcave anymore, right?
Yeah.
And that he essentially gets a trophy given to him by Killer Croc. You know, replacing his, you know, great big T-Rex that he used to have in the Batcave. I love this book all over. And what it demonstrated to me is that Matt Fraction's got a really strong, deep understanding of who Batman is. And, you know, I like the story he's telling. I like what he's setting up with the police department, you know, under Vandal Savage, even though that's weird. But the artwork is great. It feels like a fresh take. It doesn't feel like some of the same spun up stuff post Scott Snyder. This feels like it feels like the same Batman, but a fresh Batman.
Yeah, and this feels inspired. It feels like getting Matt Fraction to come to Batman is an inspired choice that we, you know, and, you know, DC, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, we still read some Marvel books, but it goes in phases, right? But DC's now between Dan Mora, Joshua Williamson, Matt Fraction, Mark Waid, Philip Kennedy Johnson. You've got Jason Aaron, Scott Snyder. Like, there, you've got Tom Taylor on Detective Comics. We talked about that last
Tom
week.
King,
and Michael Jean. Tom King, is out there. You know, they're really firing on most cylinders right now in their books, and I appreciate that. What they're doing is they are definitely building connective threads between their titles. Again, there's still some jarring, some weird timing, that kind of thing, but they're doing a good job in having this connective universe, and I'm digging it.
Did you read the KO preview at the end of the book?
I did, and I actually liked it.
I did too. I was like, I had not anticipated liking the KO thing.
Yeah.
But I dug that kind of hard. I thought, you know, usually these previews don't do a damn thing for me. And I got to tell you,
Red Hood and the one for Justice League Red, like neither of those did anything for me. But this one, I was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, well, you know, and it starts off just like I like, you know, I love when we get our heroes together and they're out of costume and they're just talking, right?
Yep.
And you know, it's game night, and game night was killing me, Paul. I absolutely dug this, and I was like, okay, well, I hadn't been on board before, but I will buy the first issue of KO.
I'm actually looking forward to it, especially because, I mean, one, it's Darkseid. We haven't seen Darkseid in a year now, right? He was taken off the board in DC All In number one. So I'm curious, you know, but we see Darkseid coming in. You know, we've now had these, you know, we have the hell pits or the fire pits growing on Earth. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready to see what they're doing next.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, you know, I think all in all, pretty darn good week for DC. And last week, I think they turned out some, you know, on the whole, some pretty darn good books.
Yeah, so, agreed.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, from DC Comics specifically, we have Absolute Batman issue 12 coming out next week, continuing the Absolute Bane storyline that I'm quite enjoying. We have Red Hood number one, which is the book I just mentioned. New creative team that I'm just not familiar with, but it's a mature readers take on Red Hood, but an in continuity one. I don't know. I'm curious. I may check out issue one. Also from DC Comics, we have CORT, Children of the Round Table, which is the new Tom Taylor book. It's not, even though it's being published by DC, it's not necessarily, you know, it's not an in-universe DC book. But definitely curious about that one as well.
Are you going to pick it up?
I am.
Are you? I looked at the preview art and I wasn't sold.
Yeah, I think it's intended to be all ages, but I'll give the first issue a shot just because it's Tom Taylor. Even if it's not for me, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Okay. Well, you'll have to read it early. If it's good, I'll pick it up, but you have to give me some notice so we can talk about it.
Yep, I'll give you some notice. Okay. For Marvel Comics, One World Under Doom continues with issue 7. Wayne and I actually have been enjoying that book. It turned around after the first few issues, so curious to see where that one goes. And from Image Comics, we have the conclusion of Daniel Warren Johnson's arc on Transformers. Issue 24 is his last issue of the book. He's been writing it since issue 1, so that Robert Kirkman and Dan Mora will be taking over with Transformers issue 25. So this is the conclusion of Optimus Prime versus Megatron, from Daniel Warren Johnson. So
I am not I am not a Transformers guy, but I am so deeply intrigued by Dan Mora's drawn on Transformers.
I'm very excited for it. Don't get me wrong, I've really enjoyed Transformers. I think it's been a bit mired in sadness.
Yeah.
For the second half of this book, it feels like there has been no hope. But obviously there will be in this last issue. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Robert Kirkman and Dan Mora bring to the book after this arc.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you're thinking about Superman, what you think about Matt Fraction and Jorge Jimenez over there on Batman. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
But not Threads.
I mean, Threads, but like, does anyone even look at it now?
Instagram sends me this thing like, hey, there's a post over here you might be interested in on Threads. I'm like, no, you know how I'm not interested in it? It's on Threads.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, Paul, I'm sure that the boys will be over their kissing sickness next week. So we should have a full house next Saturday. So.
It's a shame that Wayne missed out on an entire Superman episode.
But, I know, right?
But he'll be back.
Too busy kissing Andrew.
Smooching. Mm-hmm. We will catch you next week.
Sounds good. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.